This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for coming on this very beautiful day in early spring. My name is Tova Green, and I'm very happy to be back at Hartford Street. It's been a while since I've spoken here. And for those of you who don't know me, I live and work at San Francisco Zen Center. Currently, I'm the assistant to Abbess Linda Cutts, who's my teacher. And I'd like to start by thanking Reverend Mio and the Sangha for inviting me to come today, and also to thank Linda Ruth. She's been my teacher now for 20 years and has made a great difference in my life. So today I thought I would talk about encouraging words. What are some of the words that have been encouraging me lately and that might encourage all of us in our practice and in the ways in which we meet our challenging world? The challenges in our lives, in our communities, in our city, our country, and beyond. And when I thought about encouraging words, I remembered the words I heard in the fall. I was able to participate in the fall practice period at Tassajara Zen Mountain Center this past year, and every time there's a sesshin, which there usually are three, one a month in the practice period, someone gives what are called encouraging words during the last period of zazen, kind of, you know, help everybody stay awake and alert in that last period of the day. And often it's the head student or the shuso. And in our last sesshin in December, Lauren Bouillet, who was the shuso, offered these words that many of you are probably familiar with from Leonard Cohen's song Anthem. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything that lets the light shine through. And I found those words very encouraging. I was very aware of the cracks in many things, including my own difficulties with practice, and to recognize that we don't have to be perfect, that there is a light that shines through the cracks, and that the bells can still ring, and they ring beautifully at Tassajara. And then I found that the song actually begins with these words that are very relevant to practice. The birds, they sing at the break of day. Start again, I heard them say. Don't dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. And because Leonard Cohen was a Zen student, and those words encourage us to stay in the moment, to be in the moment. And so, being at Tassajara last fall, I was not able to follow the news so carefully. And my birthday was on November 8th, which was the worst birthday of my life, I have to say. And the next morning, when I went to the Zendo, there were signs on both sides of the Zendo, because we didn't know the night before how the election was going. We had an idea it might not be going well. But there were signs on both sides of the Zendo saying Trump has won. And alongside those signs, a poem was posted, which I didn't get to read until later in the day, And it was a what we call a personal day at Tassajara, which meant there was no regular schedule. And after breakfast in the Zendo, we had some free time. But during that first period of Zazen, there was a lot of sobbing in the Zendo, sniffles, and I myself was quite sad. And so I posted a note on the dining room doors offering a space where people could come if they wanted to and meet as a council and just do a go-around sharing some of our feelings and thoughts about the election. The theme of the practice period was upright and complete speech. And one aspect of speech that's so important is listening, how we listen to one another, how we listen to ourselves. So, and I was feeling quite disconnected from other people because of all the silence and not really being able to get the news, what was happening outside Tassajara. And that council meeting, about 10 people came and we passed a talking stone around and shared our thoughts and feelings, really changed how I felt in terms of is feeling much more connected to the Sangha and hearing, you know, the many voices, sadness, anger, concern, and then, of course, wondering what could we do and what would be our response when we left Tassajara. And then the poem that was posted by Linda Ruth turned out is a poem by William Stafford, and it was called A Ritual to Read to Each Other. I'm not going to read it all, but it was a very inspiring poem because it was about how we communicate with each other and how important it is to be awake, to notice what's going on around us, what's going on inside us. And it just ends, it ends with this verse. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes or no or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. So I came back to City Center in late December, and the world did seem cracked to me at that time, and I was yet still so aware, having been at Tassajara during the fall, of the beauty of the world we live in, watching those leaves turn golden and then brown and then fall, hearing the rain on the Zendo roof and the song of the creek go louder day by day. But I also really appreciate the beauty of the building at 300 Page Street and the faces of the Sangha members I see every day. And I was very happy to be back. I wanted to say, in terms of encouraging words, that poetry has been a great source of encouragement for me, to me, over the years, and especially in the last few months, as has Zen practice, Sangha, and finding ways of expressing my concerns about the words and actions of the current administration. And I also want to say that I'm not assuming that everyone in this room or everyone who comes to Zen Center has the same sensibilities that I do about what's happening in the world. And I think it's important for us to have a space that is open to everyone and welcoming to everyone, no matter what their political views. So if my words are uncomfortable or disturbing to any of you, I hope you'll talk with me about it. And I'm not trying to promote any particular way of thinking. I'm just kind of trying to talk about what I find encouraging in these times, and maybe a little bit about why I find them encouraging. And just to say about something about the etymology of the word encourage, of course it contains the word courage, and the root of courage and encourage is cœur, the French word for, an old French, it was C-O-R, the French word for the heart. So what speaks to our hearts, or how do we speak from our hearts? And some definitions of encourage are to inspire, hearten, so there's heart in it, take heart, embolden, support, and help someone feel confident. So I'd like to share a few of the encouraging experiences and words that I've encountered since returning to City Center. And I'll say, when I came back, our Tanto, many of you know, David Zimmerman, head of practice, invited me to participate in or co-lead a few practice events at City Center that gave me an opportunity to join with others in expressing and my concerns and also learning some new skills, new ideas that were and have been helpful to me. So the first opportunity happened on Martin Luther King Jr.'s weekend, and David had been looking for a speaker, and he was directed to a wonderful young man named Kazu Haga, who teaches Kingian nonviolence. And he started, he's 31, when he was 17, he came to the United States from Japan as a child with his family and had a difficult time growing up. And then when he was 17, he joined a pilgrimage to sites in the South that were involved in slavery in one way or another. Was led by a nun and a Nichiren monk from Western Massachusetts, where there's a peace pagoda, and it's in Leverett, Massachusetts. And this was a pilgrimage where they stopped at former plantations and at sites along the Underground Railroad, where slaves were able to leave the South and escape to safety. And this made a great impression on Kazu, and then he went, following that, he spent some time in India and Nepal visiting other Buddhist sites and teachers, and came back, and I guess he had had the opportunity to learn more about Gandhi's teachings, and then came back and studied Martin Luther King Jr.'s teachings, and started an organization eventually called East Point Institute for Peace, in contrast to the West Point. Or maybe it's East Point Academy. But and he gives classes and workshops on nonviolence, which he interprets very broadly. It's not just about civil disobedience, but how we meet people with whom we disagree in our lives, how we can participate in protests in a nonviolent way, how we can work on resolving conflicts. And I was invited to give the Saturday talk at Zen Center with Kazu, because our tradition is we have Zen teachers giving those talks, and he wasn't a Zen teacher, although he is a Buddhist teacher, and just very eloquent. And so as part of that, we each talked about our path to being on that seat. And I had many of you know this, but for those of you who don't, when I was in college, I spent the summer before I graduated in Greensboro, North Carolina, as part of American Friends Service Committee voter registration project. And a group of black and white college students spent 3 weeks registering people to vote. And at the end, we got on a bus, and with police escort, we went from Greensboro to Washington, D.C. for the March on Washington. So I was able to hear that famous speech of Dr. King. And sitting on that in the Buddha Hall with Kazu that day, talking about the teachings of Dr. King about nonviolence, was a very wonderful experience for me. And I went to his workshop the next day. If any of you are interested, I would recommend studying with him. He does 1 or 2 day workshops, a lot of them in the East Bay. He's doing one actually this weekend at East Bay Meditation Center. So David also suggested to our practice committee that we do a sitting, a public sitting on Inauguration Day. And because it was the day before the Women's March in Washington, D.C., he thought it should be led by 2 women. So he invited me to do that, and I co-led the sitting with Lisa Hoffman, who some of you may also know. And we planned an afternoon of Zazen and Kinhin, very simple. We gave Zazen and Kinhin instruction because it was open, people could come and go. And at one point there were 50 people in the Buddha Hall, but about 100 people came and went that afternoon. And at the end of the day we had a sharing. People just said their names and what brought them and what they were taking away. And the gratitude for that space, having the space to sit on that day, which was a difficult day for some people, was very strong. And I felt so grateful that I was able to participate in that. And then another thing we did was, which just ended, David and I co-led a class with 2 teachers from East Bay Meditation Center called Interconnected, Challenging Racism and White Privilege with Mindfulness and Compassion. And it was a class for white people who want to make racial justice a reality in our communities. And we started with a half day and then had 7 Monday night classes during the practice period at City Center. And there was a lot of interest both from residents at City Center and Green Gulch and from community members, and enough interest that we're going to continue with a monthly group for white people who want to continue to explore our unaware, unconscious privilege and how that affects our relationships with people of color and some of the practices in our practice places. And I think that kind of group is happening at other Zen centers around the country. I know David was very inspired by a program that started at Brooklyn Zen Center when he was spending a few months there. And then we're also preparing for a community meeting at Zen Center about what's called Brave Spaces. So Brave Space, sometimes we use the word safe space, but there's a couple of people who wrote an article about why a brave space may be more relevant in our times than a safe space. And David's write-up for the meeting, we're having a meeting for all the residents and some wider members of the wider community are open to discuss what a brave space could look like. And the description of it, every class and workshop at Zen Center is an opportunity for us to ask, how do we embody our commitment to collective liberation? In these intimate gatherings, we each carry different histories, traumas, and experiences of oppression. To be together requires risk, vulnerability, pain, and discomfort. Our intention is to create a brave space to support our practice in building a loving and transformative community. And I think the word loving runs through all of these experiences that I've been learning about and part of. And loving kindness, one of our basic teachings is a very important way of meeting other people, coming from that place of compassion and loving kindness rather than from a place of feeling separate or of anger or hatred. So fundamentally, a brave space is an environment in which we feel visible and able to express ourselves without fear of attack, ridicule, or denial of experience. We use the language of brave space to emphasize the need for courage over the illusion of safety. In a brave space, we do not seek to avoid conflict. We commit to understanding the source of the conflict, taking responsibility for the impact we have on each other, asking for support, and learning how to care for each other. This is a difficult and loving process of expanse that we must do together. So we haven't had that meeting yet, but in it we'll talk with one another about what the idea of a brave space means to us, what it might look like, how we can demonstrate respect for the wholeness of another being, how to express when something in a discussion has hurt us, and so on. So I think that's an effort we're making at City Center, to have some of the dialogues that can be difficult but rewarding if we approach them with a feeling of deep respect for one another. So another thing I did when I came back from Tassajara was to start going to the monthly breakfasts of the San Francisco Interfaith Council. Any of you ever been to one of those? So the San Francisco Interfaith Council has been around for quite a while. And these monthly breakfasts are held in a church basement of St. Mark's Episcopal Church. And people come from all denominations. And over the years, on and off, there have been some people from Zen Center who go, and as well as people from some of the synagogues, churches, cathedrals in San Francisco, some Sufis, some members of other Islamic groups. They really have a very diverse group of clergy who go, and I've gone inviting other people from Zen Center to go with me. And because of that, I participated in their annual Martin Luther King Day March, which goes from Caltrain to Yerba Buena, and it was very inspiring. There were so many families of different ethnic and cultural backgrounds who came, and I talked with a lot of parents as I was marching, who said they just felt it was important this year to come out, and they wanted their children to have an experience of marching and support of Dr. King's teachings. And there were then in early February it was the 75th anniversary of the internment order. There was an executive order that was the impetus for rounding up 120,000 Japanese Americans all up and down the coast and sending them to these internment camps, most of them in the western part of the country. And I was able to go to a ceremony in Japantown as part of a group of clergy and give a blessing at the commemoration of the 75th anniversary. And I think partly because, you know, Suzuki Roshi was Japanese, I don't know what would have happened if he had come earlier to this country. He might have ended up in an internment camp. But certainly a lot of the Jodo Shinshu Japanese leaders and Dharma teachers were subject to that internment. And I have so many Japanese-American friends that I felt very honored to participate in that. And the message that the Japanese-American community was giving was that they would stand with Muslims if Muslims were targeted. And they wanted people to know about the experience that had led to the internment of so many Japanese Americans who were citizens, basically, and that they did not want to see that happen again. And that happened around the time of the travel bans, so very relevant to our time. Just see how I'm doing for time. I wanted to spend a little time talking about the other way in which I've found words to be encouraging. I really do love poetry and reading and writing poetry. So I had already registered for a 5-day poetry retreat in February with two poets, Ellen Bass and Marie Howe. And Marie Howe, she's a poet who lives in New York. She's written 3 books of poetry. The first one, it contains quite a few poems about conversations she had with her brother Johnny, who died of AIDS at the age of 28. It's called What the Living Do. And I've always loved that book. Marie is a wonderful poetry teacher as well, as is Ellen Bass, who's a lesbian poet who lives in Santa Cruz. But Marie wrote a piece that she distributed after the retreat about the importance of inner space in these times. And she said, "Before and after political action, I want to remember to protect and preserve that space where moral action and poetry begins, to dwell within that space nourished by reading, by listening, by inner discourse, by music, by silence, to remember to sit still within that richness and receptivity, and for a few moments more to say and do nothing." And I think poetry often comes from that silent space that we experience in Zazen. So many poets have been writing and speaking out about the importance of funding for the arts, which is one of the things that may be cut. And another writer who I respect greatly, I'm going to be leading a retreat with her at Tassajara this summer, is Laura Davis, who lives in Santa Cruz. And she did a 1-day workshop called Finding Light in the Darkness, Writing and Self-Care in the Age of Trump. So I went to that workshop partly because I wanted to get to know Laura's work better. And it was a wonderful day of writing with prompts. There were 45 people who came to it. So I think a lot of people find writing helpful in these times. And I wrote a poem which I will share with you. But before that, I just want to refer to one other thing that I found very inspiring. There was a group of Buddhist teachers who wrote a statement. It's called Stand Against Suffering, A Buddhist Call to Action. So I think sometimes we wonder, well, what is the relationship between our Zen practice and political action? Is there one? And when I moved to the Bay Area, one of the first groups I found out about and then became very involved in was the Buddhist Peace Fellowship, which really made clear the connection between working for peace and justice and our Buddhist practice. This has been a very strong part of my practice. So it was encouraging to see the statement, which was started by 13 Buddhist teachers, and then at the time I printed this out, there were 80 people who'd signed it, but there are many more who've signed it since. And it starts with a quote from the Buddha: as long as a society protects the vulnerable among them, can they be expected to prosper and not decline? And the statement goes on to say, Buddhism does not align itself with any party or ideology, but when great suffering is at stake, Buddhists must take a stand against it with loving kindness, wisdom, calm minds, and courage. Committed to compassion, we follow the example of the Bodhisattva Kuan Yin, she who hears the cries of the world. Like her, we listen to the cries of suffering people and do everything in our power to help and protect them. So I'm not going to read more. It's quite long, but I'll bring it upstairs to the tea if any of you would like to see it. And again, I found this so encouraging that our Buddhist teachers from all denominations, Tibetan, Theravadan, Zen, different schools of Zen, were united in signing this letter. I wish it could be read everywhere. I think it's very important for our Buddhist voices to be heard. So I'd like to end with this poem. It's called "This Is How You Do It." Start the day in silence. Remember what you're grateful for. Listen to the sounds of the city waking up as you sit in the zendo. Breathe in, breathe out. This is how you do it when you read the headlines. Breathe in, breathe out. Remember what you're grateful for. Turn toward what scares you. Pick up your pen and write. Letters to the editor, poems, thank you notes to people whose courageous words or acts inspire you. This is how you do it when you feel weak or frightened. Revisit the stories of those who resisted during World War II, who risked their lives in the South in the 60s, who kept speaking when McCarthy tried to silence them. This is how you do it in your community. Listen to one another's concerns. Offer food when a hungry person rings your doorbell. Tell your family and friends you love them. Sing together. Dance. Find your sources of joy. Breathe in. Breathe out. This is how we do it. So thank you very much for your attention, and I look forward to speaking with you over tea.
Would you like to take some questions?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I'd be happy to. I wasn't sure whether we did that here or upstairs.
It starts here.
Okay, yes, I'd be happy to take some questions. Yes.
In the beginning you mentioned complete speech.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk more about that?
Yes, so in the Eightfold Path, there's this word right. So right intention, right view, right speech, right action, and so on. And Linda Ruth was investigating right. What does right mean? There are different translations for it. Sometimes another one is upright and complete. So, because when you talk about right, you think about, well, then there's wrong.
Yeah.
Right, and wrong speech, and it's not always so dualistic or clearly divided. So upright and complete. And I was going to include some of the Buddhist teachings about speech, so maybe I'll just say there were five, in terms of thinking about upright and complete speech, five things the Buddha taught were helpful for us to consider. That we speak at the proper time. What we say is true. It's spoken gently. It's beneficial. And it's spoken with a mind of loving kindness. So those are some of the characteristics of upright and complete speech.
Thanks.
I'll Sorry, I don't know everybody's name, but you and then David.
Thank you for Dharma Talk. It was very poignant. This time, particularly for me, of feeling a great deal of vulnerability personally in terms of just health, but also in context of political transitions and try to say this, breaking down a lot of tears. Both my husband and I come from families who escaped tyranny. And been moved, as you said, think of those who went through the great tyranny of World War II, been moved with the writings of Anne Frank. And how brilliant the soul of a child who spoke her truth, sometimes wildly and angrily with her parents, but being able to come to, she said, with writing, greater clarity of the love in her heart. That was able to transform the hearts of tens of millions from the tragedy of millions dying and the valor of her life to stand tall even with her illness at the end with her sister as they were dying from typhus in the concentration camp. And in her writing, speaking to the wholeness that she found in the rays of the sun off of the clouds from what she would see from that apartment where they were hiding, and just to find these rays of light, as you said, coming in through the cracks, speaks to me of the power of finding compassion for ourselves in this difficult time and acting with loving kindness.
Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing Anne Frank into the room. Thank you. Did you want to comment?
No.
Thanks for talking about white privilege and something that I'm studying in the program at the hospital. And I did see that course at the East Bay Meditation Center and would like to talk to you more about it. Is Zen Center also offering anything about teachings on white privilege? And, I mean, you mentioned the Brave thing, but is there actually courses you can take there? Or?
Well, we just did a 7-week class on white privilege called Interconnected.
That was at City Center?
Yeah, it was at City Center.
Okay, is there another one?
We're going to start an ongoing group that'll meet once a month, and it will be open to everybody, so you don't have to have taken that class.
Okay.
And be glad to let you know about it.
Okay.
We probably start it in a month.
Great, hoping. Thank you.
Yeah. Welcome. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Since this is a brave space, I want to say right now I feel like I used to feel when it was time to choose up sides for some horrible sporting event. And I was invariably chosen either last or not at all. And becoming adult was in part realizing that there are people who have talent, or as the English say, who are good at games, and there are people who aren't. So now I'm sort of feeling like I can't find my talent for political action. And in the current circumstances and environment, it leaves me feeling embarrassed and ashamed. So in case there's anybody else who feels that way, I wanted to share that aspect also, since I don't seem to be someone who connects in that particular way. Not since I spent 10 minutes blocking the doorway of the ROTC building at Stanford in 1967. That was about it.